This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Iowa edition, yes, we're in Des Moines, Iowa, for tonight's GOP presidential debate, the final contest prior to the Iowa caucuses, which take place Monday night. Congressman Louie Gohmert is here in Iowa, and he'll join us here in the studios of the Iowa Family Leader, where we're doing the broadcast from today. Now, what should we expect from tonight's debate? Well, that's what I'll ask Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. We'll talk about that and more when he joins us a little bit later in the program. Also, when two Christian schools were set to face off for the 2015 state championship game in the state of Florida, both schools had hoped to do what they always do before the start of a game, pray. But the State Athletic Association said, no way. Liberty Institute's Jeremy Dice is going to be here with a play-by-play on legal action that may take place. And a survey out this afternoon from Lifeway Research reveals where Protestant pastors are leaning in the race for the White House. We'll talk about that as well. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics, our guests. You can also sign up for my daily update, which comes to you free in your email inbox Monday through Friday. All you have to do is sign up. If you'd like to keep up with me on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. This is really an amazing story, and this is why religious liberty is such a prominent issue in this election, why it's an issue that so many Christians across this country are concerned about. It's because the freedom of religion is being treated as if it is a contagion, if it's some kind of disease that has to be quarantined within the four walls of a church. That's how government under the Obama administration, and it has fostered state governments and local governments to take the same steps. And, you know, to be fair, it's also being driven in large part by the left, like, you know, the ACLU, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which feel emboldened because the president has their back. And so they feel emboldened and they're pushing their agenda. And these school boards, these city councils, you know, strapped for money and afraid. Yes, they're fearful. That's why I encourage you to buy a copy of the book No Fear and give it to them and show them where there are children, young people who have more courage than many of our elected leaders. But they're folding and running when they're challenged by these leftist groups. And the freedom of religion is not simply something you can do on Sunday morning. I know, as we've talked about it, the president describes it as the freedom of worship. No. We have the freedom of religion, the freedom to believe and live our lives according to our beliefs. And that, my friends, is what's under attack today in America, the freedom to live according to your beliefs, the freedom to not be forced in your health care program to pay for drugs that can facilitate or cause abortions, the freedom to not be forced to participate in a ceremony that is a mockery of something God has created called marriage. It's the freedom to be able to teach your children your values, to teach them Orthodox Christian principles and not have them contradicted by school officials with your tax dollars. That's the freedom of religion. That's what our founders gave us in the First Amendment, the freedom of religion. And I've told you the story before about how we got our First Amendment in the Bill of Rights that was first introduced into the House of Representatives in August of 1789. The first standalone right that was enumerated for the people was the freedom of worship and the rights of conscience. That was the top priority, and the freedom of speech and assembly were separate. Now, the Senate got it, and they combined it all into one. But the founders understood the importance of freedom of religion, that everything else we care about hinges on it. And that is what is in the crosshairs of the left today, because they know if they can force Christianity to be contained within the four walls of a church or between, you know, the thoughts between your two ears, they will have won. Because Christianity only impacts the world when you can talk about it, when you can share it, when you can tell your story, when you can live according to those truths. Well, I say all that to talk about what's happening in Florida, or what happened in Florida, but it's not over. It was the Florida High School Athletic Association. This is what they did. When two Christian schools were set to face off for the 2015 state championship this past fall, both schools were going to do what they did before every game. They were going to open in prayer over the loudspeaker. Well, the Florida High School Athletic Association said, no, you cannot do that. You cannot pray. Well, thankfully, another one of our allies, Liberty Institute, has gotten involved, and they are going to bat for this, these schools, to make sure this does not happen again, to defend their freedoms. That's why we need organizations like Liberty Institute. Joining me now is the attorney on the case, senior counsel for Liberty Institute, Jeremy Dice. Jeremy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be here, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, Jeremy, you guys are you're there. I mean, you're also you've handled the case for Coach Kennedy, a prayer case up in Washington State. Now you're at the other part, the other corner of the country down in Florida. Give our listeners a sense of what took place here and what you are doing to help these Christian schools.
Well, you outlined it pretty well. You know, these two Christian schools that had earned the right to play in the state championship football game for their division. They've had a long history of praying before their games, and not just over in a corner out of the way, but both schools pray over the loudspeaker before the kickoff there. And in fact, that's been something that our client, Cambridge Christian School, has been doing since the 1960s for all of their athletic competitions, let alone football. And so this long history, and not only football, by the way, not only sports, they also do it before their classes and during their chapel services and other times. We even have like a war room, a prayer room dedicated on campus there for people who want to come in and pray at any time. So prayer is just something of who that school is. And so it was very natural when you have two Christian schools playing in the state championship football game. They both said, look, let's just keep on doing what we always do. They asked the FHSAA if they could use the loudspeaker. And the FHSAA came over and said, no, this is prayer. You're not allowed to pray on public property here because the city of Orlando owns this stadium. And we're a state actor, so we can't give you that permission to pray on this campus. Unfortunately for the FHSAA, they're on the wrong side of the law here. The law is pretty clear. The state government cannot censor a person's right to pray in public.
I mean, if you carry that to its logical conclusion, because it was a state facility, I mean, you could claim the same thing about a sidewalk, a street. I mean, basically, you cannot do anything that would allow, I mean, think about it. I mean, what if a church bus is driving on a state highway to take people to take kids to Sunday school? Is that not facilitating then if you follow this same idea?
Yeah, and you know, my greatest concern right now is that when the state begins to tell the church where it can and cannot pray, and specifically when the monopoly over all high school athletics in the state of Florida, that is a governmental grant to this organization, when they teach their student-athletes that it is wrong to pray in public, what lesson is that given to our students there in Florida? They're learning now from the Florida High School Athletic Association that you ought to be ashamed of your faith. There's certainly nothing you can do in public with, in fact, as you called it, it's contagion that we ought to hide somewhere else off campus. It's frightening to me to think if they can censor the speech before the state championship football game, well, why not the playoff games? Well, the Florida High School Athletic Association also regulates every single athletic competition in the state. Is it going to be very long before they're telling the private schools at their own home field that they can't engage in this type of behavior? The far-reaching impacts of this are enormous and are detrimental to the theory of religious liberty in this country.
So, Jeremy, you have stepped in to help these schools out. What are you hearing so far from the Athletic Association? Are they apologetic? Or are they saying, oh, yeah, we realize we made a mistake, we're not going to do it again? Are they doubling down?
They're doubling down. Yeah, no. If any answer has been given, it's been, you know, we're the state. We can't do that. And you're not allowed to pray on state property. That's just what they've gone back to again here. So, look, we've given them a little bit of time to think about it. We've given them 30 days from this past Tuesday to respond to our demand letter. And if they don't want to apologize to us right now, they can certainly go ahead and do so later on in front of a judge, because that'll be the next step. If they don't apologize and assure the state of Florida that they're going to abide by the law and the Constitution, then we're going to make a federal case of it. We're going to take it to federal court and rectify this wrong so that the next time these schools and our client is in that Citrus Bowl, this isn't going to be a problem.
Well, and I just a warning to them, the track record of Liberty Institute, which I'm very familiar with, is about 9 out of 10 cases that they take to court, they win. So the odds are not in favor of the Florida Athletic Association of prevailing on this, because, quite frankly, the law's not on their side.
That's exactly right. Yeah, look, the 11th Circuit, which is part of what Florida is a part of there, has said, look, the state cannot banish religion to whispers in the broom closets. You know, that's not allowed. And that's exactly what the state is doing here. They're basically saying, look, you guys go back into the broom closet. You can whisper about religion somewhere else, but you can't engage your religion here in public. That's wrong. The court is very clear on this. When the government actor censors a private group of individuals from even with a loudspeaker before the state championship football game, that is what the Supreme Court has called one of the most egregious forms of content discrimination. Translated, it's really, really bad. In the Florida High School Athletic Association, they want to go to court about it, but I don't like the odds for them in the outcome.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting live. We're actually in the studios of the Iowa Family Leader here in Des Moines, Iowa. My guest, Jeremy Dice, we're talking about a story out of Florida. Two Christian high schools denied the right to pray before their face-off in the championship. Jeremy, we're almost out of time, but maybe I'm asking you to speculate here, but we're seeing an increase in these type of cases where the free exercise is being denied. In your opinion, what's behind that?
You know, I don't know. It used to be that they said, you know, if you want to pray in school, then go to a private school. Well, now we've got a private school and two of them that have gone to a state championship football game, and they've said you can't do that. I actually heard a commentator in Tampa the other day say that, look, this is a voluntary association. If you don't like it, go form your own association. There is a really wrong-headed notion that religious liberty is something to be enjoyed silently in the four walls of a home or a church. That's it.
Yeah.
That can't be the case. And we need good people to stand up for it, unless it does become the case.
All right. Jeremy Dice, thanks so much for being with us. As always, we're grateful for the work of Liberty Institute and all you guys do to defend religious freedom in this country.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks, you want to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Very important that we stand for religious freedom in this country. All right, when we come back, we may be in Iowa, but we got a little bit of Texas with us. Congressman Louie Gohmert is going to be joining us to talk about tonight's GOP presidential debate and a few other things coming up next week in Congress. So don't go away. We're back with a lot more Washington Watch right after this.
The American Marines raising the flag on the island of Iwo Jima. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is the Iwo Jima Memorial. We will visit it in Washington, D.C. on our spiritual heritage tour. It's to honor the Marines that have gone before us to defend our country's freedom over the centuries. We're going to see the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, and much, much more on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in June and September. In addition, we'll have a trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So much of American history on display there. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way for our tour as I host it. So If you want more information, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com, and join us in June or September.
So 10 years ago, Katrina hits the Gulf Coast, and my dad and I thought it'd be cool to go and help somebody and start sharing that passion, that vision that God laid on our hearts. And shortly thereafter, American Family Radio was telling the nation about what God was doing through 8 Days of Hope. And that trip that was meant to be 5, 6, 7, 8 people was 684 people in December of 2005. We rebuilt 84 homes, and we were just so excited about what God was doing. Since then, 1,700 homes have been built, rebuilt across the country. We have taken 17,000 volunteers. Hundreds and hundreds of lives changed forever because they've given their hearts to Jesus, either serving on a missions trip or because they were a homeowner that we were serving during 8 Days of Hope. And now a new ministry, Hope Reigns, has sprung out of this ministry called 8 Days of Hope. Go to our website, 8daysofhope.com.
Our country is in trouble. We're in a moral nosedive.
And recovery won't come from a political party. It'll come from returning our focus to God. You can help by being a part of the Decision America Tour.
In 2016, the Decision America Tour will visit all 50 states. At each stop, Franklin Graham will share the life-changing truth of Jesus Christ and challenge Christians to live out biblical principles at home, in public, and at the ballot box.
And I really believe this next election is going to be one of the most critical elections in the history of our country.
Be bold about your faith in Christ. Sign up for your state's prayer team. You can also get friends together to pray for America, our leaders.
And for the Decision America Tour.
If you do, we'll send you a free prayer journal to encourage you in your prayer life. Go to DecisionAmericaTour.com.
The only hope for this country is the Church of Jesus Christ.
DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us as we're broadcasting live from the studios of the Family Leader here in Iowa, in Des Moines, Iowa. We are here for the GOP presidential primary debate, which takes place tonight in Des Moines. It is the last presidential debate prior to the first real contest, which is Monday night here in Iowa with the caucuses. And things are neck and neck here. And last night I was here talking to people traveling around the city and the state. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But there are a lot of folks coming through here. I mentioned last night as I was talking to a group, the people in Iowa, I think, have probably a special place in heaven because all these politicians who come through here every 4 years and they got to listen to them. That was humor. That was humor. Okay, but
that was funny.
Louis, you do laugh at my jokes, but I laugh at yours.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
But one of my friends who was in, a lot of my friends are in town because look, conservatives are coming here to help other conservatives. Governor Rick Perry was here last night. Steve King was here, Congressman of Iowa. Bob Vanderplatz, who is the president of the Family Leader, was with us. And my good friend, Congressman Louis Gohmert, who often sits behind the microphone of Washington Watch, one of my closest friends on Capitol Hill from Tyler, Texas, was up here. And so he's stepping in to the studio here to join us. Louis, welcome.
Well, it's always good to be with you, Tony. And though I may sit in your seat time to time, I can never fill your shoes.
Well, that's because you wear boots.
Well, there is that.
But Congressman Louis Gohmert represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas, but he's up here in Iowa, and I'm going to ask him, why are you in Iowa, Louis?
Well, of course you know, but, I guess it was about April or May, I told a very good friend that I would endorse him, and like you, I've got a number of good friends in this race for president. But that was Ted Cruz. I had so many good friends running in 2012, I didn't endorse anybody. And then we ended up with a very nice man who was the only Republican candidate who could not badmouth Obamacare, because they really did design it after the disaster Romney Care. So anyway, I decided this time, you know what, I'm going to just pick whichever of my friends I agree with more on more issues. It's a stand-up person, and that was Ted Cruz. So I told him back then I would endorse him. Of course, I also added, and I told him he could roll it out when he wanted, but I said, you know, there was always that rumor floating around that Lindsey Graham had been promised by John McCain, if he'd support him, that he'd make him attorney general. Never knew if that was true or not, but I would like to ask a promise from you before I make my commitment to support you and endorse you, Ted. And he said, what's that? And I said, you got to promise me that you will never, ever try to appoint me to anything. And he laughed. He said, I can make that promise.
So that was an easy one, huh?
Yeah, that was an easy one.
Well, I appreciate you joining. And let me just give this disclaimer here before we continue this conversation. I, too, as Congressman Gover made reference to, have endorsed Ted Cruz. I did that earlier this week, which you can read about on my Facebook page. But I must say, neither the Family Research Council, the various radio networks that carry this program, nor the Washington Watch program supports or opposes candidates for public office. And my personal endorsement should not be interpreted by any as an endorsement by those organizations. So I just want to make that clear up front. Louis, as we move into this debate tonight, there's been kind of a cloud of controversy over this debate because Donald Trump is boycotting the debate because Megyn Kelly was too hard on him. And so he's not coming. What does that mean for tonight's debate?
Well, I'm not sure we know yet. Understand there's, we heard one candidate, our friend Mike Huckabee, was deciding that instead of being in the first debate that hardly anybody watches or listens to, he would go out to the event Trump's having. And I'm then I understand another very dear friend, Rick Santorum, may have announced he's going to not participate in that debate that hardly anybody ever watches, but is going to go out and be at the one with Trump. Heck, I didn't endorse anybody last time. I did give Rick Santorum money. He was one of a couple that I had a lot of faith in. But anyway, who knows what it's going to mean. But let me just say, I understand where so many believers, so many Christians have been in the past 7 years. We now are experiencing something I never thought I would experience in my life. I never experienced it growing up. And it's what Jesus promised us would happen, and that is, you will be persecuted for my sake. I never got persecuted growing up in Texas. I bet you didn't in Louisiana. But we're being persecuted now. Christians are being persecuted here for our religious beliefs. And I think people are so sick of the nation being fundamentally transformed away from being a Christian nation. It kind of reminds me maybe of the children of Israel. They had not been as faithful to God as they should have, and things weren't going like they wanted. So they said, God, give us a king, and he can fix all this. God said, that's not what's going to fix it, and it's not a good idea. But I get the feeling people are thinking, if we could just have somebody that is as narcissistic and self-centered and will stand up to anybody as Obama is, then that person can go back and fix it. That's a problem.
I think it's, you know, what I see as I travel the country is there's a fear.
There is.
A fear that the country has changed, that we're losing the country, as you said, a fear of the loss of religious freedom. But we have to operate in faith, not fear. Fear
That's right.
causes us to make the
That's
wrong choices
right.
and go the wrong direction.
That's
All right,
right.
folks, we're up against a break. Congressman Gohmert's going to stick around with me. I'm not going to let him go anywhere. He's going to stay here with me, and we're going to continue this conversation about a number of other things. Also, out today just earlier, a couple hours ago, Lifeway Research released a survey of senior pastors across the country, 1,000 Protestant senior pastors, on where they're leaning in the presidential race. We're going to talk about that when we return here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
A very key piece of economic data out today, durable good orders. Durable good orders has had a rough go of it for the last year. It's one of the reasons why about 6 months ago I said that third or fourth quarter GDP number is not going to be very good. That was after about a four-month trend of durable good orders being negative. And I said then, this is not good. And I said then, it's going to lead to problems in manufacturing. It did. Manufacturing in contraction mode. That means it's shrinking. That is not good. Anyway, we're now 11 months into this durable goods negativity, and we got a number out today that was a negative 5.1. Talk about missing expectations. It wasn't even close. And it should be immediate concern for future GDP, and you can pretty much rest assured that fourth quarter GDP is going to be horrendous. And if it isn't, it's going to be for the same reason that third quarter GDP wasn't horrendous. That's because something is cooked. But certainly, it is not giving us a very warm and fuzzy feeling about the economy for 2016. This is going to create more contraction in manufacturing, more issues with productivity, more issue with wages, more issue with hiring, and on it goes. So let's see how this impacts the markets in the near term.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. In fact, if you want to find out what I'm thinking in terms of the presidential race, that's the place to find out, either on my Facebook page or on Twitter, at T. Perkins. I'll be posting on that on a regular basis as my outlet for my political thoughts. Here, I'm just giving you my philosophical thoughts. I want to talk about, in fact, I think we're going to have Congressman Steve King going to be joining us a little bit later in the program. He's the Iowa congressman who probably better than anybody has his finger on the pulse of Iowans and what they're thinking as they approach the caucuses on Monday night. So he's going to be, we may try to catch up with him. He's crisscrossing the state. But right now I've got Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas, a longtime friend and often sitting in for me here on Washington Watch when I'm out. I want to talk, there's a couple things happening on Capitol Hill next week. Congress was out this week. They were snowed out with the snowstorm. But when they come back next week, there'll be a big vote. It is the vote to override President Obama's veto of the budget reconciliation measure. Now, that's the measure that defunds a large portion of Obamacare and redirects about 80% of the tax dollars going to Planned Parenthood elsewhere to facilities that do not engage in abortions. That's a big vote coming up this week. Congressman Gohmert, why is that so important when we look, maybe take a long view of things?
Well, it's something that we have not been doing that we should have been doing. And it at least with the disagreements I've had on with Paul Ryan on a number of things in his new speakership, he's still an honest guy. And sometimes we get mad. Look, I can disagree with somebody and it doesn't mean they're dishonest. But back while Boehner was speaker, I mean, this guy's been president for 7 years. We've been in the majority for a while now, back again after the Democrats had 4 years, two under Bush and then two under Obama, but we've been in the majority. And we have not passed bills that we sent to his desk and forced him to veto.
Right.
It has been crazy that we have not.
This was only his fifth veto in his entire presidency.
And we should have been forcing that over and over. And too many times, our former leadership and some that still are there would say, look, there's no sense going to all this trouble to get it to his desk. It's going to be vetoed. And it's important to force it, to get him to veto it. And as you remember, and we've talked about it back in the 90s, under Clinton, he said he wasn't going to sign off on welfare reform. He wouldn't sign off on ballots budget.
Partial birth abortion.
Yeah, and he wasn't going to sign off on those things. But like on welfare reform and the balanced budget, you know, sure, he vetoed it. But when they did that, there was so much more public support built anytime he vetoed it, that eventually they passed it and sent it, and they got a balanced budget, and they got welfare reform. And nowadays he brags, well, you know, when I was president, I had a balanced budget, and I got welfare reform done. Right. No, he signed it because they finally got enough votes to override his veto. They didn't get enough the first time.
Right.
But you have got to force that confrontation. It makes a difference, and we haven't done enough of that. So we've at least got to take these votes. I kept trying to tell the senators, go ahead and vote for cloture. It doesn't hurt to take that vote, and then you can get those senators out of the Senate how they voted.
Absolutely. And going back to the illustration of the ban on partial birth abortion, Clinton vetoed it, by Congress going on record, it set stage for a Republican president to sign it into law. So what we have now is we have this budget reconciliation measure, which is something that can only be used once a year. It only requires 51 votes in the Senate, but we've proven something. We've proven that we can defund Obamacare and make it go away
if we have a different president.
Absolutely.
That's right. That is so critical.
And there's no excuses now. Mm-hmm. We've seen it can be done, and so the next president is going to be the one who can make that happen. It's critical. It's absolutely critical.
It's so critical. And then when you think about the Supreme Court appointments, that will decide whether we get back on track as a nation of laws, where there is a separation of powers, the checks and balances, or we just finish off losing all our checks and balances.
Yeah, because you have, last Friday, I stood there on the Mall with thousands of other pro-lifers. 43 years ago, the Supreme Court decided that it knew better than everybody else that a child was a choice, not something that was to be cared for, given to us in the image of its creator. We saw the court in June of this past year redefine an institution that has been around for millennia. The next president will appoint 2 to 3 Supreme Court justices. And unfortunately, we know the influence that the court has on the country. We need strict constructionists on the court. We're going to talk about that. When we come back, we're also going to be hearing, I think, maybe from Congressman Steve King, who's crisscrossing the state of Iowa, going to give us a read on what's happening as we move up to these critical caucuses on Monday night, the first in the nation vote for president in the party primaries. We're going to talk about that. And a new survey out by Lifeway of 1,000 Protestant senior pastors. Who are they leaning toward? We're going to talk about that. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
From songs like Shake It Off to Whip Nene to the lifestyles of the Kardashian family, it's hard to say what's on the minds of millennials in America. It's something that companies and researchers have been trying to figure out for years, and for good reason. The millennial generation now makes up over a quarter of America's population. More importantly, what do millennials believe? The answer to this question is a vital clue into the direction our culture will take in the years ahead. In a new publication from the Family Research Council, the beliefs of millennials are explored at length, with analysis of data from numerous surveys about their views on marriage and family, religion, and values. As the data reveals, millennials are drifting away from natural family values. As a whole, they are largely indifferent toward religion, are apathetic to the ideal of intact married families, and believe that homosexuality should be accepted by society. Even so, the strong sense of justice that most millennials possess provides a glimmer of hope. For more on how to speak truth to the millennial heart, visit frc.org/millennials.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
Watch, I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. We're broadcasting live from the studios of the Iowa Family Leader up here in Iowa. We're in town for the GOP presidential debate, the last debate before the First in the Nation contest, the Iowa caucuses, which take place here on Monday night. And we're going to hear from Congressman Steve King in just a bit. He represents a good chunk of Iowa. And he's been crisscrossing this state in preparation for the caucuses, so we're going to talk with him about that. But out earlier today, the Lifeway, it's Nashville-based Lifeway Research, which is associated with the Southern Baptist, they did a telephone survey of 1,000 Protestant senior pastors regarding their candidate of choice in the presidential primary. Now, they asked Republican pastors who they were leaning toward, and they asked Democratic pastors who they were leaning toward. And the outcome is pretty interesting. Who do you think Republican-leaning pastors or Republican pastors, not all, I mean, some people are, some states, if you're independent, you can vote in Republican primaries and participate in their caucuses, because increasingly a lot of people are leaving the Republican Party because it's kind of left them. It's left their value set. So who do you think these pastors, I'm going to ask, Louis has not yet seen this poll. Mm-hmm. All right. So because I just got it as I was heading to the studio, and I mentioned we had it. All right, Louis, who do you think was last on? Well, I can't say that because I didn't have everybody here. But all right, who do you think was number two?
I would figure Ted was number one. But the way Trump's been talking, it makes it sound like he'd be number two.
Nope. You are not correct, my friend.
So Huckabee, former pastor?
Actually, he didn't make the list.
Wow. Wow.
You want to try again? This is called Stump Louie here on well, Washington Watch. I'm going to make this a new segment.
Well, most of my friends are supporting Ted like I am, but,
Okay, I know the suspense is building, so I'm just going to go down through this. The he's not on the list either.
Wow.
Now I don't have the entire breakdown. I just got this in a news release. Here's how it lines up. This was 1,000 Protestant senior pastors.
Well, that's
it's a good group. I mean, so you can.
It's a great group.
The margin of error is probably 3% or less. So here, probably 2% or less. Anyway, here you go. Ted Cruz has 29% of that support. Ben Carson is second with 10%. Okay. Marco Rubio third with 8%. Donald Trump has 5%. And then all of the others are lumped together with 8%. Now, the undecided is actually the biggest category. That's 39%. But far and away, Ted Cruz has the most of those pastors who lean toward him, which I think is very telling. And I think it's the religious liberty issue that we were talking about earlier that they're concerned about. They know they're feeling it. I mean, I'm talking to pastors across the country, and they're now feeling it. We told them it was going to happen.
Well, Ted comes by it naturally. I was just out at Ted's headquarters with his dad, Raphael, and we were talking about 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles.
1st and 2nd?
No, I'm sorry. It's 1 and 2.
Okay.
1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles. But speaking of kings...
Yeah, speaking of kings, before we go to a king, we have a king on the line, but before we go to the king of Iowa, we're going to talk about our Democratic-leaning pastors. Who do you think their number one choice was?
Is it Bernie?
No, it wasn't Bernie. It was actually Hillary, 38% for Hillary, 31% undecided. Because
I was guessing for Bernie, I thought, because he was... You know, despite this profound issue disagreement we have, he's a more honest guy. I thought maybe they'd go for the more honest person. But,
well,
I'm sorry.
All right, enough said.
Wrong game.
All right, here we go. We're in Iowa, as I said. We're broadcasting from the studios of the Iowa Family Leader in advance of tonight's debate, the final debate for the GOP presidential candidates here in this state before the first contest on Monday night. And I can't think of anyone who knows this state better, especially when it comes to the process of the caucuses, than our next guest, Iowa Congressman Steve King. Congressman King, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony and Louie, thanks for having me on, and it's really appreciated to have a chance to have a conversation today as we go through this countdown to caucus night.
Well, what's it looking like? What do you think the participation? A lot of people have been projecting that there's going to be this huge increase in participation, driven primarily by Donald Trump and kind of all the drama that he's interjected into Iowa. What's your sense? I think you have your finger on the pulse better than anybody.
Well, I've surely had an opportunity to be out and talking to a lot of people and just a lot of input that comes from a lot of different sources. And I think this large number of undecideds tells us that it's unlikely that we're going to see as large a turnout as they're predicting for Donald Trump. And so if it's a 30 or even some say as much as a 50% undecided, a lot of people were going to make their decision after they heard the debate tonight. And now that Donald Trump has pulled out of that, that's got to score against him. And I think it'll keep some people home that might have otherwise gone out for Donald Trump. So I'm going to say that we're going to have a record turnout, but it's not going to be a record times X times 2 or even 3 that some might be predicting. I think we're going to be in that 135,000 category when 120 was the most we've seen in an Iowa Republican side of the caucus. And that kind of a result says that Ted Cruz is in a pretty decent position. I think that the turnout's going to make the difference on this, but it's going to be close, and it's going to take a lot of effort on the part of our constitutional Christian conservatives register our preference. Yes, Lou.
How do you think Trump pulling out like he did, and now Huckabee and Santorum saying they're not going to participate in that lower card debate. And, of course, you know, not that many watched the first one. But how do you think Trump not coming to the big debate is going to affect the decision of in the caucuses on Monday? Do you see any effect there?
Well, I have. People I've talk watched about it. Yes, and we saw it last night, Lily and Charlie, at NOAA's, at the pro-life event for Ted Cruz. You saw when the subject came up about Trump pulling out, you saw a wash across the crowd there last night and many of the people I talked to. But I just don't know how people that are undecided go to the caucus now and caucus for Donald Trump if they were poised to be able to listen to the debate tonight and try to draw an objective opinion. I mean, that's a tantrum that it's going to score badly against Donald Trump. I'm just completely convinced of that. I think it suppresses the turnout some, and I think there will be a hardcore of Trump supporters that come out. But I'm hearing from people that they maybe were thinking about Trump when they got up yesterday morning. When they wake up this morning, they've kind of checked him off of their list or at least moved him down a ways.
Congressman King, let's talk about how important Iowa is in terms of being a filter for the rest of the nation. Because if a candidate does not come out of Iowa strong in this process, chances are they're not going to last very long.
Well, that's true. I mean, we say that there are two, maybe three tickets that are punched out of Iowa. And historically, that's been pretty well right. John McCain survived a fourth-place finish here 8 years ago, I guess it would be. And that was a bit of an anomaly, and that was a very close fourth-place finish that he had to Fred Thompson. So other than that, one, two, or three, and I've been saying for the last week or maybe even two that it's a binary decision now, that it's Trump and Cruz. And we're starting to see some reports of polling that would indicate that Marco Rubio has mounted some kind of an effort to come back. That doesn't match up with what I'm hearing out here in the streets and on the roads and gravel roads in Iowa, so to speak. So we will have to see, but there are about, I would say, two-thirds of the caucus goers are constitutional Christian conservatives, and they're going to want to register that preference. And when you look around, I say to them, but you should, if you were going to vote for Santorum or we're going to vote for Huckabee or Carson, they would fit that category. But they're so far down in the polls that you should send them a thank you card for running and go to caucus for Ted Cruz.
Well, for anybody that believes that 2 Chronicles 7:14 is an important way to have God heal your country, then they have to also consider, is the person I vote to someone who would be willing to humble himself before God? Hopefully for believers, that will be part of the equation. And you don't have to go any further than 2 Chronicles.
Well, I'm sorry. Louis, sorry. I'm biting my lip, Louis. I'm biting my lip.
I noticed in our church, we put the Arabic numeral dose in front of Chronicles, but we always read it 2 Chronicles regardless.
Huh. Okay. Well, how about that?
All right, well, okay. What can I say? Last night, and folks, if you'd like to see what I had to say last night, you go to my Facebook page.
You were terrific. Thank you.
I had a great warm-up act. You were right before me. But when I was there, Steve, I have to say, coming here to Iowa, and I've been here many times, we did the judge bus together. Actually, the three of us.
We were on the
judge bus together.
And by golly, when the three of us get together, things happen around here. Wow, that was great right here in Iowa.
Judges, too.
That was awesome. Well, just awesome.
You missed
there's
it.
There's a scalp for each of us.
Yeah, that's right. The three judges. But, you know, really, the folks in Iowa are concerned.
I want to donate my scalp to Louie.
Well, he might need it up here.
Could use it.
The folks that I see in Iowa, I mean, I was surprised how conservative this state really is. And I felt like I was in South Louisiana last
night. And I felt like I was in East Texas.
Yeah, I know. Texas is just really part of Louisiana anyway. But, you know, the folks, I mean, they were... They were focused on the moral, spiritual issues as well as the political issues. They get it. And that's why I'm actually thankful that Iowa is the filter for these presidential contests. And I'm hoping that the the Iowa voters that go to these caucuses on Monday night understand the gravity of the responsibility and opportunity that rest in their hands.
Well, and I'm confident they do understand it, of course, and thankful as well. That I've been just looking at this for a long time, and we've been involved in the caucuses here for a long time, myself and my family. But there will be three generations of families that will walk into caucus on Monday night, the grandparents, the parents, and the children that are of age. And that's pretty phenomenal when you think they've been raised up on all politics all the time, the magnitude and the gravity of these decisions. They're examining these candidates and watching so many things that maybe people out in New York don't think of. But, for example, watching how they behave in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, watch what they eat, you know, who cleans up after who, how do they hold the door, how do they treat their staff. All of those little things come together now in this wonderful social media that we have, and we have a conversation that goes on nationwide, concentrated here in Iowa. And then so that's why this debate coming up tonight means so much, because they were holding their fire until they could see this and evaluate. They want to be objective. They feel the responsibility to be objective. And then the conversation was going to start late tonight and go on all the way to caucus about the debate and all of the other pieces that they have that come together. And some of them would settle in on their way to caucus and what they were going to do, and a few of them would make up their mind when they heard the speeches at caucus.
Yeah. No doubt about it. You know, Larry, I was just thinking, it's a good thing we don't do caucuses in Louisiana. I mean, we would have four and five, six generations, because, you know, down there in New Orleans, those people that have long been gone, they would still show up.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I've told a lot of Republican friends and Republican groups that, you know, there's so many different voting blocks in the country that some Republicans say, we're never going to get any of those votes. Let's just don't even waste our time. And we need to reach out to more of those groups. And one group that just traditionally votes Democrats are the dead people. Dead people traditionally vote Democrat, and I don't think we should just give up on to the Democratic Party. I think we ought to be going after some of those votes ourselves.
I don't know. I think some of them are up there with you and
in Congress
on Capitol Hill.
Well, they're being lit up by their constituents these days.
Maybe we'll send Donald Trump over there to debate them. Maybe he would come out on top of that debate then, if he's debating with the dead people.
All right, Steve King, you're going to be at the debate tonight in downtown Des Moines. All right, we're going to see you there. Louie, you're going to be there as well?
I will be there. See you guys there, yes.
All right.
We'll bring our sense of humor along with us, Tony. Thank you a lot.
And I know you'll be in the spin room afterwards, and I'm sure some folks will be in there spinning like tops. But the spin room, by the way, folks, that's where after the debates, different ones go in to kind of give their take on how the candidates did. And so that's called the spin room. Steve King, as always, thanks for being with us.
I thank you both. Thanks, Tony and Louie.
Yep. I got no better friend in Congress. Thank you, Steve.
Well, I am grateful to have been joined today by two great Americans, Steve King and Louie Gohmert. Guys, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being with us. Hey, good news. We're expanding. Coming up next week, our daily program goes on to the Bot Radio Network. So if you've got friends and family in parts of the country that they haven't been able to listen, well, maybe now they can. We'll have more information out on our website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.